What was I talking about?
Your Italian friend.
What was his name again?
Joe.
Oh, Joe. Okay. So I became friends with him. No, I don't do comedy. Anyway, I became friends with him in a few years. We had dinner and stuff, and we had a common mutual interest. And about a month and a half ago, he said to me, and he was looking kind of bad, and he said to me, "I've stopped eating. I don't really feel like eating." So I talked with him about that, and he said a few things about it. And then I began spending a lot more time with him at his house because I could see him deteriorating pretty fast. And one day I was there, and he was sitting on his garage stoop in the sun, and his hands were shaking so badly he couldn't light his own cigarette. So I was lighting his cigarettes, and I got to light his last cigarette. And while he was there, his daughter Dawn called up, and she said, "We're going to be there in a couple weeks. I hear that Joe isn't doing so well." And she was talking to him. I could hear the conversation. And he said, "I'm fine. You don't have to come. Everything's okay." And I grabbed the phone from him, and I said, "Dawn, get here now. Don't wait 2 weeks. Don't wait 3 days. Just get here now." So the family came down. And while he was sitting there, I gave him back the phone, and he said to me, "Tom," and he's been saying this for a long time in our phone conversation, "Tom, I love you." And this is a die-in-the-wool trumper, die-in-the-wool road rager, and a very angry guy for some good reasons, actually. He had been injured in an auto accident that wasn't his fault, and he had 23 screws in his spine, and he was in a lot of pain all the time, besides a few other things. So as he was sitting there, he said, "Tom, I love you." I said, "Okay, Joe, good." So, and then he said, "I'll never forget you." And I said, "Okay, I'll probably never forget you either, Joe." And then he said, "I just want to thank you." And I asked him, "Well, okay." And he said, "I'll never forget what you've done for me." And it really took me aback because I didn't know what I did for him. I never washed his car. I never changed his tires. I never helped him re-roof the house. He said, "I'll never forget what you've done for me." And I was kind of actually shocked by that. And I said, "Okay." And then, you know, we talked, and I went. And when I got home, I realized what he was talking about when he said, "I'll never forget what you've done for me." What it was just my presence, being with him at the end. That was it. That's what I did for him. I'm always running around trying to do things for people, you know, fix their shed or put stairs in for him because I'm a master carpenter and all this other stuff. That was the hidden value. And what I have to say to you is that my invitation is for you to realize the hidden value in your life. And the hidden value in your life is you. And I didn't even realize that. I didn't even realize I was going to get emotional either. And then he passed. You know, it didn't take him that long, but I've been helping the family out with his stuff because they live in New York and, you know, they couldn't come down. But that was the hidden value. So you, I'm going to point an accusing finger at you. You are the hidden value in your life. And I know that you don't talk to friends and family as much as you could of how much they're valuable to you and their value to you. So I invite you to tell that to them and to allow them to, whatever way they do it, show their appreciation of your value in their lives as well. So being the hidden value, speak up about it. You know, you've been a friend of mine for a long time. Thank you. You know, I really value your friendship. Well, how many people say that to each other in a normal course of events? Well, I invite you to do that. And some people do, but I invite everybody to do that because there are people who really look up to you and you don't even know it because they don't say a word. I mean, I've had people talk to me after I've facilitated many thousands of healings. Well, did you know you saved my life? Well, no, I didn't because you never told me. How would I know? So one of the things, that's the first part of my talk. The second part is I want to give a gift to you. It's called the census process. And in order to be the hidden value you are in your life, it's a key element to be present. Because when you're not present, you can't even see the value you are to other people or to yourself. So the census process is something that you can remember And it's on, it's in a lot of my books on my website, A Course in Shamanism. And I have some books back there with the loving process as well. And the loving process, I know I've talked about it before, and I will forever talk about it, because how many people had lunch yesterday? Or ate something? Or how many people plan to eat something today? Good, of course, because it nourishes the body. Well, we don't always approach our spiritual work the same way. Every single day we have to eat something spiritual in order to maintain and increase our spiritual motivation, our spiritual inspiration. It just has to be worked on every day, just the way it is. So the senses process, the loving process is on my website. You can download it anytime you want for free, because it's so valuable in being the foundational aspect of all of the work I do in the healing facilitation that I do with people. It works, because repeating the loving process over and over and over again in your practice, as a practice does, it reveals your already existing, I'm going to emphasize that, already existing unconditional love for yourself that you already have as an experience. And it's that experience that is the key to you allowing in whatever good you allow in your life. Once you're in touch with your unconditional love, what we characterize as miracles and synchronicity happen, but they're really not. It's really the way life is when we get out of the way. And I really like getting out of the way. So the senses process is like this. Have you ever been and you walk in the kitchen and somebody's baking bread? And then what happens when you walk in and you smell that bread baking? You're overwhelmed. So in that one moment, everything that's out here becomes focused in here to the present moment awareness of being here now. And being here now is the most important aspect of being the gift or your hidden value and your own experience of your own unconditional love for yourself. So the senses process will get you into being here now, because we have a physical apparatus, and it's just like the loving process. I believe in using the physical apparatus to access the spiritual world, because this is the doorway we've got. So you can do this eyes closed or eyes open. I would invite you to do this eyes closed. So the first thing is, as you're sitting there with your eyes closed or open, we're going to go through the five senses. Now, only five, even though we have thousands, we're only going to do five. First one is smell. So just sit there and just use your nose and focus on smell. Just breathe in. Do you smell somebody's perfume? What other smell? I can smell the carpet. Whatever smells are in the room. So for a few moments, just focus on the sense of smell. And after you've done that, use your ears. You can keep your eyes closed. It really helps. Use your ears. Take your ears and listen around 360 degrees at all the sounds in the room. The clicking of the microphone, my feet on the floor, making the floor creak, maybe a little traffic outside. And just circle the room with your hearing. And when you're complete with that, move on to the sense of touch. What, sitting in the chair, is it warm? Is it cold? Is it cold in the room? Are your fingers, are your palms sweaty? All the sense of touch. Focus on your sense of touch. Is your throat dry? What does it feel like to be sitting in that body of yours? And after you get a little bit of a sense of that, focus on your sense of taste. You can taste your mouth. Can you taste your breakfast or the toothpaste you used or the last thing you had to drink? Taste. Focus on taste. the actual taste in your mouth right now. What does it taste like? And after you've completed that, move to your sense of sight, eyes closed or eyes open, because it's interesting to do it either way. What's in front of your eyes? When your eyes are closed, what colors do you see? What images? What is actually not your thinking of seeing, but what are you actually seeing with your eyes closed or open? And if your eyes are open, pay attention to shadows. We take for granted that they're there because we usually look at what's making the shadow. And then when you're ready, open your eyes. Now, spirituality is a series and processes of increments. So I didn't expect that somebody would do the senses process and all of a sudden wake up and get enlightened and be, wow, that was... But if you repeat it over and over again, and it's a very simple process to repeat, and you can use other senses that you have as well, what happens is you automatically, without having to work at it, because it really isn't that much work going through the senses process, you automatically become more grounded, you automatically become more present, and you automatically become more centered by repeating it over and over again. Just like doing the loving process, you automatically become more in touch with your direct experience of your unconditional love for yourself. So that's the senses process. And then the loving process, I wanted to give you things that you can actually do at home, so you can do the senses process at home. Is that pretty easy to remember? It's probably really easy to remember. Good. That's why I like that one. So are there any questions about any of that?
Not so much a question, but I appreciate the metaphor, because when you're in a situation where you're using more than one senses in that, and just what life would be like if we tune ourselves to that, so
right, and
I'm grateful, but I appreciate the metaphor.
Yeah. Well, I remember that from childhood. It really hit me walking into it when my mother was cooking bread. It's like, whoa, this is good, and that's all you could smell. But and one of the other senses that we have is the sense of vibrational frequency. And one of the things that in my healings I'm able to do is if somebody calls me from Thailand or California or Canada, I'm able to, with only permission and invitation, that's it. I had to ask those two things. And if it's yes, yes, sense their frequency. And by doing that, go into their body and embody whatever is going on with them. And I feel everything that's going on with them. And then we discuss it and do healings at the point at which their energy is blocked the most. Could be here, doesn't matter where. And once that's unblocked, a healing occurs. And I never know what kind of healing, because I'm not in charge of that. I'm just facilitating it. I don't say what happens. They say what happens. You have a sense. Everybody has that sense of frequency and ability to, we call it psychicness, but it's not really reading another person's mind. It's reading energy. And then you have the same thoughts that they have because your frequency is the same frequency as theirs. And that's just the way it works. Yeah. Any more questions or comments? I don't prepare like a thing that I read out for these talks. I like to do spontaneous stuff because I find it more useful because people have questions and they have... how many people have health issues? Any health issues? I'll raise my hand. Yeah. Okay. And well, one thing I noticed about health issues is that to the degree to which you get in touch with your already existing unconditional love for yourself, and I'll say that 1,000 times because it's very important to your health, is to the degree it's more synchronistic and fluid in overcoming a health issue. And there are some health issues that are, in my experience, and I could be making it all up since we make it all up anyway, are more difficult to overcome than others. But they're not really in a God sense. In a God sense, it's all the same. But it seems that some take longer than others. You know, I have a health issue with my wrist where I broke it 30 years ago and it's collapsed and I'm not supposed to have any grip strength and I'm supposed to have surgery. Never happened. And it's not going to happen. Never lost strength. And you know, it hurts sometimes. But you can do it too. There's no healing facilitation that I've ever done that I haven't seen something in somebody heal that they were told that it was not curable, and it was eminently curable, and it has to do with the client and my absolute confidence that they borrow, that they will heal. So I can promise you this, that there is no health issue whatsoever that I have ever seen. I have seen x-rayed, a verified and documented broken bones heal in 2 days. So I don't think, in my experience, there's anything that cannot heal. And we may feel it can't, we may think it can't, we may be worried that it can't, but if you focus on something that you think it can't heal or it's going to always be a problem, then it will show up that way. If somehow you can distract yourself from it and not care about it, your statistical likelihood, not guarantee, because there's no guarantee in life, you know, plane engine could fall out of the sky and knock me off as I walk out the door. Oh, God, that's my time. Goodbye. But there's no guarantees, but your statistical likelihood of being well and curing whatever you want to cure, and I mean cure, not fix or change. I'm talking about actual cures and not just the alleviation of symptoms is possible. Anything is possible. I have seen heart attack victims I was working with give me a call from the hospital and wanted me to work with them. I worked with them. By the time I got there, she was already packing to go home. The doctors made a mistake. All the tests were all of a sudden wrong, and they did it the second time. So I've seen everything, you know, gout, breast cancer, doesn't matter. I've seen it disappear. I've seen lesions on a person's hand in front of my eyes disappear. Disappear, I mean, gone. Surprise me, but I have confidence that that kind of thing can happen with anything internally in your body as well. Any questions, any challenges? Because I can talk for hours. No?
Please keep talking. We're enjoying it.
Okay, so one of the things I would like to do is talk to you about the loving process. Since we have physical apparatus, and our physical apparatus is our doorway to what we call spirituality. And I'm very linguistically oriented. Our words that we select create the world that we perceive. We perceive based on the language that we choose and believe in. So linguistically speaking, it's all the same to me. It's all God. There's no such thing as spirituality. It might shock you when I say that, but it's all spirituality. All not. It's all God. It's just like Joe. How could I love this guy who was a angry, avid Trumper and did not fit my pictures of a friend whatsoever? Never thought I would have a friendship with somebody like that. Didn't matter. I still loved him. He loved me. So the loving process is a way to use your body as a physical apparatus, as a doorway into a deeper and more profound, what we call spirituality, which is really a frequency or a feeling that we have of more... our whole frequency is more in tune with synchronicity, in tune with our own godness and unconditional love for ourselves. It's more of a purely loving energy. So the loving process is about laying down in bed at night or during the day, or you can do it when you're driving if you're familiar with it and you do it with your eyes open, please, especially when you're driving. Don't forget that. And it's about taking one area of your physical apparatus, one area of your physical apparatus, whatever it is. For some people, it was their calves. Other people, it's their eyes. Other people, it's their hair. It doesn't matter. But there is one part of your physical apparatus, your literal body that you are already in love with, that you already love, that you have no issues with whatsoever. And you begin with that, and say it's your hand. And you begin with your experience of that hand and the unconditional love or the frequency or feeling you have for the love you have for your hand. You take that one focused experience and whatever it is. Does everybody know what part of their body they have a unconditional love for? It doesn't matter what it is. It could be your right toenail. It doesn't matter. Does everybody have a sense of that? Do you have a sense of what it is? You don't have to tell me. I'm not going to pry. Yes? No? Yes?
No, I didn't hear
anybody. Okay, well, no,
I was...
No, no. Just raise your hand that you know what it is. That's all I'm asking. Okay. Okay, good. So that part, it's about taking your experience of your already unconditional love, already existing unconditional love for yourself, for that one part of your body, and expanding it slowly or fast, it doesn't matter. I would recommend doing it the way you do it, and it's perfect, to the rest of your body. And after a while, and it's described in detail in the book, Be Bad, Do Good, How to Get What You Want in Spite of Yourself. I have some books back there. It's on the website. You can download it for free, www.acourseinshamanism.com. And what happens is, after a while, and I don't know how long a while because everybody's different. After a while, in my own experience, what happened is that light, vibrant electrical frequency energy of unconditional love began to effuse my entire energy envelope. And your entire energy envelope extends to about 5 or 6 inches beyond my fingers in a perfect sphere around my whole body and around your body as well. We only light up a small part when we sell ourselves short by not experiencing our own unconditional love for ourselves. We sell ourselves short. That going within that you always hear about in all the literature, that's what it is. Going in and taking that frequency that is already existing and expanding upon it until at one point it completely encompasses your entire energy envelope. And then, you know, you go in traffic, somebody cuts in front of you and you shut it off again. You got to work on it some more. But it's good practice going in traffic because it shows you where you are still habitually hooked up into going away from your light. And you are literally light. When you can see energy, I've always been able to see energy in people's bodies. And I don't do it like sitting here with you because I haven't got permission yet and haven't got an invitation. But when I'm working with a client, I can see it, whether it's long distance or local, I'm working with them individually. And literally, those areas that are not well are dark, dense, and blacker, and the rest of them can be light and are a lot lighter. So literally, we are, and in quantum physics, they describe it as literally we are beings of light. That's what the new scientific linguistics says, and we resonate it with it because it's science, and of course it's science, it's got to be right, right? No, but we understand it better, and we resonate it, and it leads us in that direction because we trust it. And it's trusting in the language that causes your perceptions to perceive the light who we are. We are literally condensed light. And in doing the loving process, what you're doing is just expanding upon the lightest part of yourself and making your whole energy envelope the light that it already is when you don't populate it with things that are not of the light. And the things that are not of the light are not wrong. They're not bad. They're not evil. They're just there. There's a different energy. And in this third dimensional universe, shifting from what is denser to what is lighter is the objective, just that shift. I don't try to change the world anymore. I try to shift my light. And in shifting my light, the world changes. Don't ask me how it works, but it works. You know, a lot of people are frustrated nowadays with all the circumstances and the events and the crazy. You know, it's always been crazy here. Read history. you know, imagine sitting here waiting for Genghis Khan to show up. I mean, come on. It's always been crazy and dangerous. That's the third dimension. It's some sort of, I don't know. People say it's a learning ground, a testing ground. I don't know, but I know that it's third dimension. Expecting it to be fourth dimension won't work. What you have to do is turn on your light and be the fourth dimension, then all of a sudden things shift. And one of the hardest shapes for humans to shift into is the shape of unconditional love. It's the way the third dimensional existence is. It's the hardest shape for them to shift into. People can literally take their energy and shift into animals easier than it is to shift into pure unconditional love. So that's a great challenge because, as I say on my website, the mountain is either in your way or it's on your way. Make it on your way and then have it be a challenge if it comes up for you. You know, we like traffic, somebody cuts in front of you, we relate to it like, I got to fix, I got to change, I get mad if I get angry. Well, you know, the guy ahead of you never hears any of that stuff. He can't hear you, but you're affected by it. So that's your practice, to notice your habitual reactions to anything and choose whether you want that reaction to remain or not. And in doing so, you turn on your light. It's called, lightening up. Lightening up, lightening up. Yep. So I didn't describe the loving process in total detail because it's a couple pages in the book and you have to go through the whole process, but that's the essence of it. And like I said, you could also download it from the website for free because it was so valuable I couldn't see charging for it because I wanted everybody to have it. And that foundational basis for opening up your light and unconditional love or your experience of it is important if you want to be a healing facilitator, I think. That's my opinion. Just my perspective. Just one. Anything else? Any questions? I don't know. How much time do I have left?
You can take, I would say, another 5 minutes if you'd like. We can, we've stayed later than 12 noon.
Well, I can keep on talking. I have some. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I don't know me from Adam either. When you're nobody and nothing, all of a sudden you shift into something else, and it's a different experience. The reason why I became what you would call a shaman is because years ago I was listing all the things that I did, you know, distant viewing, reading people's energy, seeing people's energy, shape-shifting, all this stuff. I listed it, and then I looked at a list of what shamans do, and there was about 50 items that were the same. I thought, oh, well, maybe that's it. And then when I went down to Peru and to work with shamans, they kept on calling me that, and I wasn't really encouraging it, but I kind of decided, okay, I'll call myself that to at least give people a reference point for the work that I do. And it's really awareness work, which has nothing to do with shamanism or Christianity or Buddhism, you know, awareness work and opening up your awareness and opening up your already existing unconditional love for yourself has to do with being a human being. But people like the label because they think, oh, well, he can do stuff. Well, we can all do stuff. We can all do the same stuff. It's whether you are willing to access that ability or not, because you've already got it. All the abilities that a shaman has, you already have. I know. It's all linguistics. We normally, with our training in indoctrination, think shamanism is a religion. It's not. The Toltec shamans were a group of people in northwestern Mexico years ago who got together from all over the world and all different practices, and they were lovers of knowledge. So they were in love with knowledge and discovering new things, and they opened up their awareness and knowledge to phenomenal degree. And that's why I respect their work, because they were totally, totally unbiased. They're only interested in what energy does and what energy does and how much knowledge or information or awareness or wisdom can be gained in practice. And it's practice that's important, because I can tell you anything in the world about the senses process or the loving process, but unless you practice it, it's useless. And I know that. So your practice is your hidden value as well. Did I answer your question today?
Yeah, I think so. It wasn't anything I was expecting.
Yeah, good. Good, that's perfect then. But this whole experience hasn't been anything I've been expecting either. So one of the things I wanted to say, and I have about, I think, 6 or 7 books on the website, but in there's another book called A New Science, How to Use the Quantum Field for Manifestation. It's on my website. And one of the things I discussed in there that I find very interesting is the three realities that we live under. You know, I remember I said we are linguistically oriented, and the linguistics, or the words that we choose, literally has the reality that we perceive show up, literally, including chair and the function of chair, literally. This isn't figurative. So there's three realities. I prefer this reality, but the other two are, number one, our personal reality. In our personal reality, it's the set of words or experiences or feelings or perspectives that we have, and it's a personal reality. And when somebody comes to you trying to force you into their personal reality, you know, that's called a cult. A cult. And it doesn't work out so well because, well, you know why. So a personal reality is the one that you have, but because you believe it doesn't mean somebody else does. Because it's true for you doesn't mean it's true for anybody else. And that's okay. That's what personal reality is. Then there's our societal or indoctrinated reality, like money. We're all in agreement that money has value. Well, it doesn't. It's just
rocks.
It's just whatever it is. You know, paper or trees or whatever cloth. But we linguistically create it with our perspective as having value. So that's the second reality, the personal reality, the societal reality. And you know it's a societal reality when you try to go against it and you get a lot of friction from others. Boom! You know, okay, my personal reality is different than societal reality. I better tone it down a little. You know, go in a big orange suit into a business meeting and see if your personal reality, because you like orange, goes over with the guys you're trying to work with. And then there's universal reality. And the universal reality is what the Toltec shamans focus on, because it's the same for everybody, regardless of the linguistics that you choose. That you are condensed light in a human physical form, that's the same for every human being, regardless of the linguistics you use to choose. You choose to describe your race, creed, color, perspective, religion, doesn't matter. You're still condensed light. That's a universal reality. The sun came up today, or it appears to, but the sun looked like it came over the horizon today. That's a universal reality. Gravity is not a universal reality. There's some dimensions where there is no gravity. But there's always frequency, and there's always energy, and always awareness in every single reality I've ever experienced, and I know of, and I don't know of them all. Just a few more than this one. So energy is a universal reality as far as I can tell. That's my perspective from my experience. Well, light or energy is what energizes light. And I don't know what energy is. I'm not saying I know what it is. I know that that thing we call energy exists everywhere.
Energy is defined.
How I define energy is the ability to cause movement, to go from light to dark, to go from still to moving, to go from not spiritual to spiritual, whatever, however you define that word. Energy is whatever it takes to cause that movement. So the ability to cause movement in any realm or dimension whatsoever, in any way, shape, or form, movement. Which is why in all the work that I do, it's all about energy conservation. To the degree with which you are somebody who can conserve energy is to the degree where you will open up portals of knowledge and wisdom and experiences of joy and health beyond what you can imagine right now. And I promise you it's what far beyond what you can imagine right now. In fact, the less you try to imagine it and just continually conserve energy, the more energy you have for whatever movement you would like in the direction of your good. And I don't like to use the term good. My favorite term is nurturing. Either something in our lives is nurturing or it's not nurturing. No judgment. Either that water I drank is nurturing, and then you drink the beer and say, well, that wasn't so nurturing. I don't feel as good. So it's either nurturing or not. The beer wasn't bad. It wasn't evil. It wasn't out to get you. But it's either nurturing or not. And my impetus in my healing facilitation work is always to support people in choosing what's nurturing for them. Not as a demand, not as a requirement, but because it's nurturing. So I don't use good or bad anymore in my languaging for any of the work I do with people. I always say, well, was that nurturing for you? Because as soon as you get into whether it's nurturing for you or not, it's a personal thing, and you don't necessarily as much look out at other people and say, well, they're doing something bad because they're not doing what I'm doing. You're just doing what's nurturing for you. Because you don't know what's nurturing for other people. Only they do. And it's not judgmental. And I like that aspect because that also frees in the energy conservation work. That also frees a lot of your energy from the hold that we have on what's good, what's bad, what's right, what's wrong. Man, it's exhausting. That makes sense? Well, you think you know what other people think, but it's what you think other people think.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. It's a non-nurturing use of energy. I don't know if you can waste energy or not, because energy can't be destroyed or created or whatever, but it's a non-nurturing for you. And we do a lot of that in this society. You know, it's rampant. It's our and that's another thing you have to really pay attention to if you want to conserve your energy and increase your own experience of your unconditional love for yourself, is how much we are indoctrinated. And I have to keep on being aware of that all the time. I slip into it, and so all of a sudden I'm doing that thing again. That's energy, not energy nurturing, or you know, or judging, or getting angry. Quick, it's a quick. But after a while. The percentage of time that you spend doing non-nurturing thing decreases, and the time you spend doing nurturing thing increases, and just keep on working it, keep on working it, keep on working it. Well, you can have the most incredible experiences of God or enlightenment in one moment, but then you know you turn around and all of a sudden I'm still here. I must be human. I didn't quite make it into the fourth dimension yet. And I don't even know if I want to. I mean, it's kind of nice here. What?
One question, and then maybe we can look at wrapping up. Will you talk a moment about Sedona and what drove you to be out in Sedona? And I'm familiar with all the vortexes and the energy and things out there, but could you just talk for a moment about Sedona and how long you were out there and how it helped you?
Okay.
Why you left?
First of all, I've been out to Sedona, but I didn't live there.
Oh.
And I was on the cover of Sedona magazine. So my connection is Sedona is traveling through. But I'm very aware of energy vortexes and the power of certain places. And in the Sedona area, it was a nice vortex. But like when I went down to Machu Picchu, people always say, oh, my God, the energy. I was like, they're gone. There's nothing here except what these people are bringing here. And I was like totally blown away by that. But I got to tell you, I was up on Mount Mitchell one day, and I went to a place that was the most powerful energy vortex I've ever experienced in my life. It was a life-changing event. When I got into this area, there were all these huge boulders covered with moss, with roots to the ground, up to the top of the boulders, and trees growing on top of all the boulders. And when I was in that center there, and it was, I always like to dive off the beaten path and just wander. I did, down some gravel ditch. And when I got in the center of it, it was quiet. All the traffic from the roads, from the Blue Ridge Parkway and all this other stuff, people's voice, everything got really quiet. There's no sound inside this vortex. And I stayed there, and I didn't want to leave. It was so nurturing, so powerful. And that was right here at home. So there is no place on earth that you put your feet that is not the same as that place that I experienced up at Mount Mitchell. Everywhere is a vortex. Sedona is not unique. This parking lot is a vortex if you're in that frequency and you can sense it. Now, granted, some places, because it's a little more open, it's easier to experience the energy of that vortex, like Sedona or that place on Mount Mitchell. It's a little easier. But it's not that it doesn't exist here too, because have you ever noticed no matter where you go, you're still on the earth? Well, the earth is the vortex, is the energy, aware, awake, and alive, conscious, aware energy. And that energy doesn't go away from places. We just shut it off in certain places, like, you know, New York City and stuff like that, for the most part, you know. But we're the perpetrators of that. We do that. It's not that the earth is doing that. And if you're of the right frequency, you can go to New York City and feel that energy the same. There's no place that is not, does not have that energy available. And like I said, there's some places just easier, it's more open. And that place on Mount Mitchell was open.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Any questions, you can always email me.
We have one that passes through this building, just a few feet ahead of where you keep walking up to. Some of us feel it easily, but others don't have a sense of it at all. So does that go back to what you were just saying about their ability to experience certain energy levels?
I would like to say it's the willingness to experience certain energy levels. We all have the ability. Without question. It's a willingness. Are you open to that? Have you conserved enough energy that your energy sphere is open to that energy and you can feel it? Yeah. Where is it? Right here? Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting spiritual experiences there over the years.
There's a river that runs under here. You know that, right? There's a river that runs under here? Underground river.
There's a creek right there.
Yeah, but there's one that runs here too. Sure.
A quick story about perception. A man was walking down the streets in Manhattan, and his companion said, "Could you talk louder? I can't understand the thing you're saying with all the noise going around." And he said, "Okay." And he pulled some change out of his pocket, and he dropped a dime on the floor. And several heads swiveled around. And he said, "It depends on what you're listening for."
Good point. We find what we're looking or listening for, don't we? We're that powerful, all of us.
We create that too.
We definitely manifest it.
Absolutely, we create it.
Well, just as a linguistic snob. I don't use the word create anymore. Only God creates. We manifest out of the quantum field. We manifest it because it's already existing. But really, humans create nothing. We manifest. It's already been created for us. All of it. Tune into it, and it manifests. That's our power. Or one of our powers.
Thank you.